your case. First, maybe you tell me his background, when and where you were born, and how you came to Seattle.
Well, I was born in Sweden, 1901, and came as a baby, you might say, 4 years old, to Pennsylvania, and came out to Seattle, 1909, when they had the Alaska Yukon Pacific Exposition. And I was raised, went through the grammar school there, and I got into newspaper games as a young fellow, and quit that and went on running streetcars for 5 years, and then went back into the newspaper business again.
So you came out with your parents?
Yeah.
What did they do?
My dad in the old country was an insurance inspector, and he had no real trade. And when he came to McKeesport, he tried to get work in the tin mills. That's what McKeesport is. And couldn't get work. And then finally got a job helping build scows that used to load coal in McKeesport or Pittsburgh.
What are scows?
Scows are barges. Yeah. And these they loaded with coal and floated down the Ohio River and the Mississippi down to New Orleans, where they unloaded them and then broke them up for firewood. So so he didn't care for that. So this exposition was being, they were laying a foundation for it, and a lot of our Scandinavian friends went out here and they liked it, and so they wrote back, and so my dad came out looking for work there. But he saw this was only a temporary deal, so finally he went into the gardening business. And so this is what he wound up doing the rest of his life.
Did your mother work outside of the home?
Never.
Do you remember when you were growing up, did they discuss politics much?
My mother wasn't interested in politics, and my dad was a little bit up on everything. But he just liked discussions. Like, as far as I was concerned, if I'd voice one opinion, why, he'd immediately take the opposite side. And maybe a few weeks later, I'd take the side that he was on. First thing you know, he'd switch down. He just loved discussions.
Did he have a particular political stance? Was he?
No. If anything, he was just anti.
When you got here, do you remember what papers he read or they read?
Well, he subscribed to a Swedish American paper from Chicago, which a lot of the Scandinavians, there was a Scandinavian press at that time, and this was sent all over the country, wherever the Scandinavian communities were. And then there was also in New York, there was a Scandinavian press. And then each little town like Seattle and Spokane, where they had even Tacoma here, would have their own local little Scandinavian press. They only came out once a week.
Did you read any English papers?
Oh,
your mother?
Well, my mother read the Society, and my dad read everything.
Do you remember what papers they read?
Well, it was the Seattle Times in Seattle.
The Times. Did they ever read the Union Record? Do you remember?
They had to, because I worked on it for part of the time.
Was that later, when you were in your 20s? Or?
I went to work on a record in 24 or 25.
Mm, so.
And I worked on until the 40s.
Right. When you were growing up, do you remember what they read, or what you read?
Well, just the local paper.
The Times?
The Times. There were other, there were quite a few papers at that time.
You didn't have one steady paper that was?
Yeah, the Times.
It was the Times.
Yeah.
So you didn't read the Record growing up?
Well, of course, record was a weekly for a long time.
All right.
And then it went into a daily. In fact, at one time it had the biggest circulation in Seattle. And then the federal government, federal marshal closed it down for a couple of days, and from then on it went down. See, when I at the finish of the record, we only had 11,000 circulation.
Wow. It was up. It was up near 100,000.
It was over 100,000. In fact, it took two presses to get out the production.
Maybe when I finish asking these questions, you tell me. I don't know if we'll do it on tape, but you tell me a little about that period when Alt was on fire. And
I was a good friend of Alt. In fact, when I came to Tacoma, second house we bought in Tacoma, I looked out the back door, and here Harry Alt was, his lot abutted our lot. And he was then, I don't know if he was retired then or was a deputy U.S. Marshal. This Saul Haas used to work on the record, and later on he went into politics, and I think he had some kind of government position, and he gave Harry a little job. He was a wonderful fellow, this Harry Alt.
So that must have been a hard time, those last couple of years in the record, when there was all those charges going back and forth.
Well, this I don't know. We weren't in on any of that. The Union record was not controlled by labor at that time. It was it turned into a little private deals and follow the private save it.
So, how far did you go in schooling before you started working on it?
Well, I tell you, I have the minimum high school credit you could have, one half a credit. I took a subject which was woodworking, and it was divided in two. So, one of it was drawing, and the other was the actual shop work. And I only finished one half of it, and then went to work.
So you had gone through eighth grade,
yeah.
and you went to work first at the paper?
Well, of course, I carried papers ever since I was a little kid. And at that time, you made pretty good money. You were just going through the transition period where you had worked on salary and started being your own merchant. So there was an incentive there, and you'd build up your routes. And I know I was making $60 a month.
Oh.
And the papers were only 2 cents and a nickel on Sundays.
So, at the time that the general strike started, though, you weren't working at the
Well, I see. I went to work in the press room, and I worked there about two years, and then shipyards were running, so I started too young anyhow. So anyhow, I couldn't see working for small wages on the paper. I went to shipyards and worked in several of those, and it was too dangerous. There was no safety first in those days, no helmets. I was catching rivets all over my body.
Right.
So,
during the war.
Yeah. So it didn't look good. And then, I went, they were advertising for streetcar conductors and motormen. And the electric company owned the line then, Stone and Webster. So I went and applied for work, and they grabbed anybody. Of course, I lied about my age. I was actually 16. Said I was 18. So, and then this of course, I belonged to the union before in the newspaper, in the pressman. That is what they call flyboys. They were the fellows that took the papers from the press. They registered them. You weren't really a member, but you were registered with the union. So I don't think I even was allowed to attend a meeting. But the streetcar men were unorganized at this time. And the way you got in, the fellows would explain unionism to you and plead with you, and also, this is how you got in. You didn't have to be a member to get a job. You had to have a job, and then you tried. And I imagine they were maybe only 60% organized. And I remember. So lots of them didn't belong.
Do you remember what year that was?
Well, that must have been 1918, is when I started on street.
So the next year, when the strike, the strike broke out, do you remember why it was called or who called it?
Well, now this is where I get a little foggy. It seems to me that the shipyard deal was almost over with. And these unions that worked in the ship, that had control of the shipyard, they were unions that ordinary times were very small, like boilermakers. This was one of the big ones. I think most of us that worked there belonged to that. And there was no, as you got so many stamps after so many months, then you automatically became promoted, so that in a year and a half, well, you were tops. I really think they just got a little bit too big for their britches. Some of these leaders, you know, they were used to making on account of their, because all the work in the shipyards, the government paid the foot of the bill. No matter how much it cost, everything was 10% plus cost. So the more they paid out, the more money the shipyards made.
Mm-hmm.
And I know lots of times when I finish the ship and then be held on duty for several hours, maybe another shift, and doing nothing. And this was costing the government.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrifically falling.
So it started in the shipyards.
Oh, yeah. Those were the unions that fomented this general strike. I don't think hardly anybody was in favor of it, but you...
Well, how did it spread then to the other unions? Why did the
of course, they worked through the Central Labor Council. They'd appear down there, and they'd get all these other unions to see if it was a strike of the shipyard workers first, and then they didn't get what they wanted, so they had to try to start a general strike. Figure this way, they could get whatever they wanted, and I don't know to this day what they wanted. And so the thing that I particularly remember, like I was on streetcar then, and we met at a union met at the Press Club Auditorium, which was a little theater on, I think, 5th or 6th Avenue. And the president of the electric company asked permission to address us. And this sticks in my mind, because I'll never forget, he made this speech. He says, you fellows know what you have to do. And he says, I can't tell you what to do and what not to do. But he says, the only thing that I ask is that if the strike is broken, that you immediately all come back to work if you vote to join this general strike. And he says, we won't attempt to break the strike, but if it is, he wanted us to join, and jobs would be secure. And I thought that was pretty wise.
Really, why did he do that? Do you have any idea?
Well, no. I don't think there was any ulterior motive. His name was Leonard, I remember that. Seattle Electric Company, which was a Stone and Webster outfit.
Did the union then vote to join the
union?
Yeah, the
union voted. And my part of it was, I stayed home.
Were you in favor of the strike at that time?
It Don't forget, I was only 18 years old, and it didn't make a bit of difference to me. I wasn't indoctrinated too much into unionism, and I knew what we did. We did because we thought that we had to do something like this, but there was no enthusiasm.
You say no enthusiasm for you or for everyone generally?
No, I don't think anybody was really enthusiastic. I can't recall that there were just these few leaders of these. But don't forget, at that time there was also IWWs, and there were lots of radicals who really were just radical and were interested in the labor movement. They were agitators.
Was the strike run or called by the unions or by the IWW?
Oh no, I don't think the IWW had anything to do with it. Of course, there were lots of union members that also carried IWW cards, but IWW always, they did a lot of good, but they were never satisfied. They would, whatever they got the next day, they're liable to go out for something else.
You say they did a lot of good. Did you have specific things in mind, or generally?
Well, in the logging industry, for example, there's no question about it that they improved conditions way over 100% there. Mm-hmm. Those fellows were treated like riffraff. They were dirty and lousy and carried all their own stuff on their back. And of course, they weren't organized at all. The IWW tried to organize them.
Mm-hmm. Before when it became obvious that the general strike was going to happen, but before it actually did happen, do you remember what people expected? Did they expect it to be a big strike? Did they think it was going to be a revolution? What were their...
I don't know. I think the thing was that most people figured, well, we'll wait and see. That was no... it was poorly organized. I think they did have a soup kitchen. I'm not too sure of this, but people took it pretty much calmly. I don't recall if there was any. There was no enthusiasm for it. I know, like, at that time, Seattle had a little municipal railway of its own that just started, and they ran one line from Seattle to Ballard, another one from Seattle to Burien, basically. And the funny part of it was, as far as the streetcars were concerned, the one that broke the strike on streetcars was the Seattle Municipal Railway. And the conductor on the first car out of the barns was from a socialist family. and this was the funniest thing to us, you know.
You don't remember his name, do you?
Windsor.
Yeah.
Because later on I worked with him, a few years later, where Seattle bought the private company. And of course, they were floated into which they could choose whichever car barn they wanted to work in.
Did you ask him why he had done that?
No. Yeah. He was a funny looking, he was an old fellow too. But this was a strange thing.
You say there was no enthusiasm, but people did think it was necessary. Why did they vote in favor of going out on strike if there was no enthusiasm?
Well, it's so easy. I've been in a couple of strikes since then, and it's so easy for a few people to get up and shout and get you all enthused instead of thinking it over. It's awful easy to say, yes, we'll strike, but it's awful hard to settle afterwards.
Right.
To my notion, there's strikes evidently were necessary when unions were first started, when they were oppressed. But this stuff, and here I used to be a negotiator myself, but here to me, striking to obtain certain benefits, this shows that either your negotiators aren't very able to sell it, or maybe you don't have a good case. And you have to resort to striking to get something. There's something wrong.
What was the general strike like? You say you stayed home?
This is just about what I did. And
remember anything about the strike?
Not too much. They're just everything just more or less closed down. The newspapers closed down. I think the Seattle Star was the one that broke the strike as far as newspapers were concerned. They decided, I think some of the printing trades unions didn't vote to strike, but enough did so that the others wouldn't function. But I know the Seattle Star did, and which was before that was recognized as a fairly liberal paper. But after that, it went down.
Is that where it got the name the Shooting Star?
It could be. I just faintly remember the Shooting Star, but that could be very well.
Do you remember if there was any violence?
That I don't recall. I don't think there was.
Was the army? Did the army come in? The National Guard at any point?
No, not to my knowledge. They might have been not to put down any violence. They might have been called in for by the. Different companies to protect their property. This I don't know, but that's the only thing. But there was no violence that I can recall.
How did you get information about the strike during the strike?
I don't recall that either. It didn't last too long, did it?
How long? Well, I was going to ask you how long. No, it doesn't.
I don't know. It couldn't have been too long. A week, 2 weeks, or that much. I don't know.
Do you think it was worth it for labor?
No. It worked just the opposite. But just the same as right now, people are not too sympathetic to labor now on account of rash strikes, strike for this, strike for that.
So public opinion turned against labor as a result of that strike?
Well, the ones that were against labor, of course, turned more against labor. But I think that's all. But I can't recall that there was any violent anti-labor amongst the general public. Of course, your industries, your manufacturers, and like that, they used anything like that to discredit.
And then in what way do you say, when I asked you if the strike was worth it, you said no. In what way was it harmful to labor?
Well, I think people lost a lot of respect for labor. This is what you should have. Good public relations. If you can't, this is what I object to, this violent picketing, you know, where they're threatening like that. If you can talk to people and explain your side to them, okay, you've got a chance for them. And you say, don't go in there, don't be a rat, and be a scab. Why, you're rubbing people the wrong way.
Did the strike affect your life or the life of the city in a long-term way?
Well, I think for a long time people wouldn't support strikes the way they might have done before.
Mm-hmm. And how about you personally? Did it affect your thinking about any of those?
Well, I didn't get enthused about it in the first place, and when we were told to go back to work, we did, and everything just started running as normal before. And this, I think, is what I told you about this Leonard making this speech. I think this made good relations there.
When you think about the strike, if you think about the strike, what's your biggest impression of it? What's like the mental picture that you have of it?
Well, it wasn't all that. There was no real basis for it in the first place. It's just something that should not have happened.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember Oldie Hansen? What do you remember about him?
Well, he was a real estater, and a good real estater, and now I'm trying to think, because at one time he owned a house right across from where we lived, and I don't know. Wasn't he a mayor at that time? Yeah.
Do you remember him in connection with the strike at all?
Well, I know he did a lot of shouting, and I think he claimed that he broke the strike. And maybe he did in a way, because I think the one of the first things that happened was this little municipal railway starting up.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of that, if that was the only strike breaking he did, if he did that, and I know he had a like Murphine, I think was the name, or this is his director for the utilities, and this little streetcar system that he had, the two lines, that was part of that. And I think his friend Murphine was in charge of that. Now it may be there then, but but then later on, of course, he went down. He founded San Clemente, and of course, he wrote. I think he also went around making speeches about how he broke the strike. But it wasn't all that big. A lot of this was maybe in his imagination.
Why did the strike end?
Well, I think it just petered out. There was if I'm not mistaken, the shipyard business was at an end. It was phasing out.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no work, and all these other unions that supported it, they weren't really in favor of the general strike.
Do you?
I would like to read up on, because this comes very faintly to my mind that Ole went around the country telling how he broke the Seattle General Strike.
Uh-huh. But you don't remember him doing that?
No, I know that he was a big windbag.
Do you remember Anna Louise Strong?
Yeah.
What do you remember about her?
Well, she of course went to Russia. She was one of the writers on the Union Record.
Mm-hmm.
And her father was a preacher. She was a remarkable woman, and I think she was persecuted by the federal government, if I'm not mistaken.
you explain first what, why you thought she was a remarkable woman, and then why you
thought she was so darn honest, and she really was heart and soul for the liberties which we take almost for granted now. She was always pleading for the right causes.
Mm-hmm. And in what way was she persecuted by the government?
Well, I think she was tried on sedition charges, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
so. Yeah. And then she went to Russia, and she became disillusioned there. And after many years, when she came back to this country.
Hmm. How about Jimmy Duncan? Do you remember him?
Yeah, he was secretary of the Labor Council, and there was another grandstander. He was wavy-haired I think his union was a machinist, and
in what way did he abuse people?
Well, I mean, he sarcastic and nasty, and if someone had get up in the Central Labor Council and give voice to things that Jimmy didn't approve of, instead of answering him in the right way, why he would abuse the other man.
Did he have a role in the strike?
I suppose so, but I don't know what it was. I imagine if he was the secretary of the Labor Council, he had to have some sort of a role in it.
Mm-hmm. Did you know any IWWs at the time?
Well, I knew the people who had been IWWs, but I don't know at that particular time.
But they weren't friends of yours who were...
Well, they were friends of a family, and in fact, what I get a kick out of some of those were IWWs as long as things were tough. And later on, one of them that died just recently became a millionaire. And another one, I think, became chief of police up in Nome, and they all changed as they got older.
Uh-huh. What did you do after the strike? Or you said you went back?
No, I went back on streetcars, and then after a few years went back in the newspaper.
And have you been working on the presses and newspapers since then?
Until I retired, yeah.
Mm-hmm. During all that, did you have time to raise a family?
One daughter.
What did she what she do?
Well, she's married in Ashland, Oregon. We put her through college, and then she was an official in a way in the what's that big department store in San Francisco? Well, anyhow. She was also in the training course, you know, that they had. And she met her prospective husband there. And in fact, she was his boss. And they married. And then he decided he'd like to work at this store. It's the big store, wasn't it? It's well known. And then he took over his father's share in the store in Ashland, Oregon.
Hmm.
And later on, he bought out the other partner, so now he has it to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also part of another of him.
Mm-hmm. What sorts of organizations did you belong to in your life?
Well, associations.
Any sort of organization?
Well, like the Elks and Swedish organization.
Those like fraternal organizations?
Yeah.
No political or religious organizations?
No.
And of course the unions. Have you been a politically active person?
No, just about like like not. I don't have ever attended a precinct meeting or anything like that, which this I think is always wrong. What people should do.
Uh-huh.
Because that's the foundation. You've got to get in on that. I do just like most everybody else. I wait until the day of election and go down and vote.
You do vote regularly.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Were you a politically active person in the days of the strike?
Less
than now or about the same?
Oh, 19 years old. So I couldn't even vote.
Right. Has there been a political leader in the last couple of years that you felt spoke for you?
Well, now I like McGovern. And I admired Roosevelt for a time. And then I admired Truman. In fact, I think I like Truman better than Roosevelt. Uh-huh. Roosevelt was great enthusiast, but things started, and then he forgot about it. Try to get something else.
What do you think of as the major events in the country or in the world since the time that you've been an adult?
Well, I don't know if it's improvement or not, but you take your airplanes, your mechanical things that have started automobiles. And I think people, I think that's the kind of stuff now. People were getting more and more educated, going into education.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that's they've lost their enthusiasm for that now.
What do you think is the most important issue facing the country today?
Well, the atomic threat. This is why I say that maybe all the things that have happened in my generation haven't been all too good.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm pretty sure that right now it's possible for something to go wrong and you can mutilate and practically put an end to civilization as we know it. We find out about these things every once in a while, maybe a few months after it happened. Right? Not too long ago, you know, all this poisonous stuff that they were supposed to dump in the ocean. Here they found it down in Portland. And there's a secrecy of it. There's no openness about it.
What do you like most about this country?
Well, I like most the fact that a working man, if he's careful and tries to do the right thing, can live like we're doing here.
What do you like least about it?
Well, all this vandalism and violence, and the fact you can't feel safe on the streets. Now, this I think is terrible. And youngsters and ripping off old ladies. And also, I think your civil servants, your police, are not doing a job that they should.
In what way?
Well, they're of course they claim that the law restricts them from doing things that they want to do. But I think they're as much a part of crime as the criminals.
Is there anything that you've seen or heard or read in the news lately that's made you feel especially good?
No.
Anything that's made you especially angry?
No, not really. In fact, I've been in a newspaper game most of my life, and I don't believe much of what I write. I've seen too much of it.
Right. What great people, living or dead, do you admire most?
Well, Judge Douglas is one.
Me from the Supreme
yeah.
Court.
No, I can't. There are no real leaders.
Mm-hmm. Living or dead.
This is about right.
Do you think most people can be trusted, or that you can't be too careful with people?
Well, I've always been too trustful, and found out that sometimes it doesn't pay off. But it's still a heck of a lot nicer to trust people.
Uh-huh. Do you think most of the time people try to be helpful, or are they mostly looking after themselves?
Well, I would say about 50-50. You find lots of nice people, and then you find others that just don't want to get involved.
Would most people try to take advantage of you if they had the chance, or would they try to be fair?
I think most would try to be fair.
What did you think of the civil rights movement?
Well, I think this is something that should have been going on all the time. I think if we lived up to our Constitution, this should never have even been a question. We're supposed to believe in this.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you one thing now, like down at the shop I was working one time. We were sitting around there talking about the colored people. And I didn't have much to say, but I thought, we're supposed to all be treated equal. And one of the fellows says, "Well, Swede, how would you like if some nigger moved next door to you?" And this is when I first moved out here. And I said, "Well, truthfully, I don't know. It all depends upon what kind of a person he was." And I said, "I'll tell you one thing. If some of the fellows that I work with moved next door to me, I'd put my place for sale." And this is true.
Uh-huh. How did you feel about the student anti-war movement? The movement against the war in Vietnam in the late 60s?
Any of that is good.
Mm-hmm. How about the labor movement today? What do you think about it?
Well, I wish they were... I think if everyone attended union meetings and took part in it, I don't like to see these small attendance at meetings and only a few. Like, you take the Teamsters, for instance, how many of their officers are elected? They're appointed. And this is crazy. This is not representative. And also, I think the main thing that the labor movement needs is it's good enough for us in the federal government to have a president and serve two terms. Why shouldn't that be equally good enough for the union? These fellows get in there, and they're in there from now on, and they handpick their successors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And this is what it means. If there is a labor movement, let it be a movement of all of us.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the women's movement?
More power to them.
Do you think what most young people need most of all is strict discipline from their parents?
Well, parents can't be, especially now when both parents, as a rule, are working, they can't be watching the kids all the time. They should set a good example.
I'm making a speech for you. How about that?
Huh? That is nice.
Huh?
That is nice.
Is it?
She clobbered me a couple of times.
Do you think that most people who don't get ahead just don't have enough willpower?
Well, what's getting ahead?
Well, I don't know if I'm prepared to say that.
No, I thought...
Some people think you accumulate money and prestige and like that. I think getting ahead is just being yourself. But I don't like to see people get slovenly or stupid or become alcoholics and like that. And I'm a drinking man myself today. A lot of people are happy with a lot less than others are.
Uh-huh. Do you think that people, if we say that getting ahead is just getting to where you want to be, wherever that is, whether it means wanting to be a U.S. senator or wanting to be anything for your life, I mean, something that's not so grand and grandiose. When people don't get to be what they want to be, is it generally because they don't have enough willpower?
It's just the way the ball bounces. Some people have got it and some haven't.
Uh-huh. Do you think a few strong leaders could make the country better than all the laws and all the talking?
Well, when you get into leaders, then you're practically getting into the same thing as well, and maybe there should be dictators. I'd rather see turnover in elections, that people don't get in and stay in and keep new blood coming in all the time, and maybe not leaders, but committees like that.
Mm-hmm. People sometimes say that an insult to your honor should not be forgotten. An insult to your honor should not be forgotten. Do you agree with that?
I can agree, but I don't think it's anything to make a fuss about. It all depends who does it and why. Yeah, and I don't know about this insult to your honor, but...
How do you feel about the school segregation issue in Seattle now?
Well, I'm not too conversant with this. All I'll say is I went to school in Seattle, to the Madrona School, and there was one colored girl in the whole school. And now this same school, the Madrona School, is about 99% colored. By the way, she was the smartest one in my class.
Could anything cause a general strike today?
What? Of course, labor is too divided, so I don't think it's good.
Mm-hmm. Are there any conditions under which you would support a general strike?
No, I think so.
What sort of conditions?
Well, this would be some group try to take over our government.
Mm-hmm.
I think a fellow like Nixon could very well try the general strike.
Mm-hmm. How necessary are your employers running businesses? Can you run businesses without employers?
Easy. There are so many businesses that run by hired men.
Uh-huh.
Who do you think ran Howard Hughes Enterprises?
Have you read anything about the General Strike, 1919 General Strike?
No, I have a few books, and I have read, but I can't recall where I read these books. I thought I had, I looked one up. I have a book here called Wapley by Chaplin, and...
By Ralph Chaplin?
Yeah.
You've heard of him? I've heard of him, but I...
Perhaps there'd be some mention of General Strike in there, but it very fleetingly mentions it. It says he was in Seattle on a speaking engagement, and this General Strike was on, and that's about all it said.
Uh-huh, so he was there then, too.
Well, it was just for a day or something.
Is this written after he had renounced socialism, or before?
Well, you have to look at the labor papers for a while, yeah. Emporium is the name of that store I was talking about.
Emporium.
It's too much Chaplin, but I think you find Anna Louise Strong and others mentioned in here too.
But this is the only thing that you've read on the General Strike since those days that you can remember?
No, this is so long ago that, you see, it made no real impression on me, the General Strike.
Uh-huh.
It was something that had better been forgotten.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a mistake always.